Welcome to the Helitech Waterproofing Home Improvement Show.
Presented by Suburban Leisure Center. The place with the big red chair. Celebrating 50 years.
Now, Scott Mosby on the voice of St. Louis KMOX.
And good morning. Good Saturday. We're off and running. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. A little hazy, but nonetheless, it's the middle of the AM radio dial, the middle of the country, middle of the day pretty much, lunchtime, finishing up breakfast here on University of KMOX. My name is Scott Mosby. This is the Helitech Home Improvement Show. We're going to talk about things around repairing, taking care of your home, upgrading, and improving. Anything that's important to you around your house, your buildings, anything responsible, anything that you are responsible for, or those of your family. Many times we have, fathers and grandfathers that are helping children and grandchildren as they buy their first house. Interesting thing going on. And indeed, we have a very unique housing market because there's really a shortage of supply of houses for sale. And this happening at the time when one entire generation, we call them millennials, is now in the home buying, home and family raising ages, and it is hitting all at one time. So the supply and the demand, supply is ever short, demand is ever increasing. Building materials, and then you throw in this whole COVID thing, and the price of lumber is the most noteworthy. So that we can talk about, and I do watch these commodities pretty carefully because it affects my life on a pretty direct basis and that of our customers and clients. My day job, if you will, is Mosby Building Arts, founded in 1947 by my father, and we are architects and every sort of designer you can imagine for a residential project, and then we are what's called vertically integrated. We have all the carpenters, painters, plumbers, electricians, the various trades necessary to provide that sort of project. And as such, our business practices have to be pretty good because, you know, why in the world do we choose to do it this way? Well, frankly, communication is everything. We still have our problems like everybody else, but by having employees pretty much on the same team, we cut up a lot of the problems that maybe you would not see. 314-436-7900 is what we can call. Please give me a call and we'll talk about whatever topic you've got a question for. Do-it-yourselfers, young first-time homeowners. Pass this show along to the young first-time homeowners because it's very important that they learn where to ask the questions because it doesn't all come from the internet and not everything on the internet is true. And oftentimes, many of the building materials and requirements for each of those materials, when you put them all together, they conflict. So what this one needs negates the assembly of that one. So sometimes you just need to ask somebody that has, a good experience. I've certainly walked the path, and if it matters, I'm on the radio because I think I've made more mistakes than any human walking. So that is really my job at Mosby Building Arts, is kind of research, training, keeping my nose out in front to find out what's coming down the manufacturer world, the industry practices, and how that affects and drives our own training at Mosby Building Arts. So it's kind of a fun career, and I would invite you to be part of it. If you like building and you like figuring things out, and it's something that you want to do for the rest of your life, we're looking for people that want careers. 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. On for today, some of the things that we'll talk about is outdoor lighting. As we get into the end of the summer and get into, you know, what I call when daylight savings time stops, you know, generally you come home to your house and it's dark. So I like to talk about outdoor lighting and how that can really affect and why it's important, because a little bit of light goes a long way. For those of you that like decorating for Christmas, putting lights up and such, you put a couple of colored wash lights, you know, spot flood bulbs on the front of the house, all of a sudden the house looks festive. It takes about 10 minutes. Well, imagine what happens if you plan through and think about what bushes, what features, what porches, what things really pop on the front of your house. So that's pretty much what we'll talk about as far as outdoor lighting. Also, finishing your lower level. How do you create a livable space downstairs from the simple to the sublime? Anything you want to talk about, golly, we have done hundreds, if not thousands, of finished basements over in our 70-plus years. And then likewise, just simple design ideas, things that can create your space or make that same space pop, look different, decorating, for example, in bathrooms, things like just the color of towels and accessories, if the washcloth color and the towel color and just some of the artwork that might be on the wall in one of the bathrooms, you can totally change the aura, the desire to visit that space by charming it up a little bit, shower curtains, rugs, things like that. So when you get into kitchens, family rooms, and the rest of the house, you know, what are those same simple things that can be done? Also, remodeling seminars coming up here. We've got one coming up here really a couple of weeks here, September 22nd. That's Wednesday, 11:30. And this is 10 Steps to a Successful Bath Remodel. So if you're looking for anything related to a bathroom remodel, whether simple or complex, from toilet seats, washlets, bidets, anything as unusual as that, which is now becoming more and more mainstream, to lighting, heated floors, all sorts of things like that. Let's get fired up here and let's get started on the phone lines here and start with Rick here. Rick, good morning. Welcome to KMWX. How can I help you, sir?
Hey, well, your timing's perfect because we're looking at a bathroom remodel and we've got vaulted ceilings in the bath, which I guess is, might be a little unique. So we're wanting to put in a heat lamp, ideally. My wife would like for a freestanding shower, you know, that drains right into it. So get some extra heat in there when you're in the shower or after the shower. But it doesn't really work with a vaulted ceiling. Do you have any ideas, design ideas on how to incorporate one without having to actually close off the vault?
Yes. Number one, to have a heat lamp, a bulb open. A heat lamp is basically a really hot light bulb. And having that thing hanging over a shower, you get cold water hitting a really hot bulb, it'll break, fall, glass in the shower. So code-wise and logic-wise, it is prohibited and unwise to do that. The next thing is, you'd be surprised just how poorly insulated some of those showers are, that if you're going to remodel that shower or that bathroom, pull those shower walls out, apply a foam or insulated board to the inside of those walls, and really isolate and insulate that cold weather that comes in, because generally that is an issue there. And then, frankly, bathrooms oftentimes just flat out don't get enough heat. That's why we see heated tile floors, which is radiant, especially for vaulted ceilings. We have ceilings 11 feet up in the air. You know, even a radiant heat, you just can't throw that, you know, 11 feet down or, you know, 8 feet down to interact with a resident.
We've got one heat vent, and it's like coming out of the floor, you know, kind of in the corner. So, I mean, the whole bathroom definitely can use additional heat source.
Yeah, I would go at it that way, absolutely, Rick, because all that heat goes up to that 11-foot ceiling anyway. So what you have disappears.
Okay. Well, great. And you mentioned your seminar, but it's 11:30 in the daytime?
It's a webinar, but you can also replay it if you sign up. You can go back and visit at 11:30 and just sign up, call Mosby.com or MosbyBuildingArts.com, and we'll make a way for you to be able to visit that. You know, because with the COVID stuff, it's just easier to do that online
now. Okay. Well, that's great. That's definitely going to be something I'm going to sign up for today.
You bet. Rick, and think about radiant heat and heating things and not air. When you have a vaulted ceiling, think about heating things, which is floor heat. You can actually heat the walls or, you know, just those sorts of things. Otherwise, if it's air-to-air heat, then it's just all going up in that ceiling.
Gotcha. All right. Well, thanks again for your time. Appreciate you.
All right, Rick. Take care. Good morning. Scott Mosby, Home Improvement, coming up next. We've got a guest from Helitech. Kevin Strange is on. He's going to get with us here in a few minutes when we come back after a little bit of a message here on KMOX. Stay tuned. Lots of things happening. Two full hours, and we are talking about you, your home, and anything that's important to you here on KMOX.
This is the Helitech Waterproofing Home Improvement Show.
Presented by Suburban Leisure Center. The place with the big red chair. Celebrating 50 years.
Now, Scott Mosby on the voice of St. Louis KMOX.
All right, back together, Home Improvement. Scott Mosby, we have phone lines open for you. 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. Toll free anywhere on the planet, 800-925-1120, 925-1120. So bring on the questions. We've got lots of things to talk about. Rick got us started with the first. If you have a bathroom or any room, sometimes over the garage, and think about this, it's not only cold in the winter, it's hot in the summer because you get, you know, ladies with blow dryers and hot curlers and the various things it takes, you know, for grooming. You start adding a lot of BTUs, a lot of heat in the summertime, and it's then the throw in the humidity from a shower. It just takes a whole lot of cooling to cool off a bathroom. So like Rick, he has one vent, and bathrooms are notoriously unvented or underserved from supplying heat. If your bathroom's in the center of the house where it really has no exterior wall, and it's pretty much open to the hallway, then it's not a real big BTU or heat need. But if you've got an exterior wall or two on maybe a master shower or a hall bath, something like that, depending on the age of your house, that wall could be grotesquely under insulated. And then if you run the heat load calculations, basically how much heat does it take in the wintertime with that wall facing whatever, you know, you come up with the number of BTUs and then you figure out what one vent in your bathroom can supply. I promise you it is underserved dramatically for heat. And then likewise for air conditioning, which now with the grooming appliances today, my gosh, those things are, you know, it's like a mini space heater. And if it runs 10 to 15 minutes, then you're heating up an enormous load, and that's where you need cooling as well. So one of my favorite ways to overcome that, because you can try and add ductwork, you can do all this. The issue is that the house was built originally with a balanced ductwork load, and so with the arteries. So it's not getting a bigger furnace, it's getting more volume flow. Sometimes it's easier just to add a split system, a kind of a Mitsubishi, Honeywell, a split system air conditioner heater that really brings whatever to the Piper and Mount in that room. So think about that. 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. As promised, with me now, I have Kevin Strange of Helitech. Kevin is out, a busy day for him. Kevin, good morning. Thank you for joining us here on KMOX.
Scott, you're going to ask me a lot of questions. I'm going to ask you one. How's the golf game?
Oh, the golf game is not improving. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Playing more does not mean better game.
No, it doesn't. How's it going?
How's your golf game
today?
I'm doing well.
Probably not as good as yours, and we'll just leave it at that.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll talk about it another time, Kevin. So what's cooking in the world of foundation repair? We've got rain coming next week, quite a bit of it, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, it seems. So, what's shaking in the world of foundations?
Helitech's very, very busy. I worked last weekend. I've actually already seen three customers today, and I have one more to see. You know, when that phone rings, you have to go see those folks, and that phone rings a lot at Helitech.
Yeah.
So we get out there and get them taken care of.
Kevin, what is the phone number of Helitech, by the way?
The phone number for our office, 1-800-246-9721.
There you go. How's that for a promotion there? So what are you seeing now? What are you seeing now? We're in the summer. We can't decide whether we're wet or dry. We keep trying to dry up, and then it starts raining, and then we have a hurricane, and it starts flood. You know, what are you seeing now, Kevin?
We're probably seeing a little more settlement. We're seeing a little more of soil putting pressure on the outside of the homes and bowing or leaning the basement walls. We're going to get into here shortly. We'll probably get into some more waterproofing. Usually the waterproofing We're seeing those calls in the spring when the rains are coming. Throughout the dry part of the summer, we kind of enter what we think is our pairing and wall straightening season. And then as the fall rains and stuff come back, and the rain events have really changed dramatically since I was young. And we're seeing a lot more rain than we ever have. Basements that have been dry forever, you know, people are experiencing them being wet. So we get out there and find the solution for all those problems for them.
Well, it's important, it's important to realize they're not boats. They're not submarines. These are foundations designed to hold up a house and kind of hold some dirt out. But as far as being built, you know, to handle enormous amounts of water, we're only now as an industry catching up to, you know, just how much water stuff we should put into these foundations. So, golly.
Right. And it's an important time because the rain events, I mean, everyone that's listening knows that, you know, when I was a kid, we didn't get, you know, we got the early spring rains. That was pretty much it. Now we're getting these rains periodically all through the summer. The fall events, as well as the winter seem to be getting a little bit warmer, and that causes rain events instead of snow events. The waterproofing is very, very important to keep that house dry.
Wow. Any new products at Helitech? Anything that I know you folks do a good bit of research and checking what's up, you know, in the front end of developing technologies. Anything new and exciting?
Yes, we have recently introduced a new product. It's called the Helibrace. It was a long time in figuring out what we needed, how we needed to do it. There are some competitors that have always offered them, and it's a great solution for a wall that's bowing or a wall that's leaning because we can eliminate the outside excavation of the house. Everything can be done on the inside. I think some of the ones that we're seeing from competitors, and I think, Jason Burke and Brett and all those guys and the engineers that are involved in that, they took that into mind, and some of our other competitors offer a one size fits all, and we weren't sure that was, you know, the way it should be handled. So as our engineering team worked through it, you know, there are a lot of other factors that we factor into it. The wall height factor, the distance that the floor joists are apart, how far we need to frame it back to distribute that load that's being pushed on the wall. So we have engineers on staff, and they worked really hard on this. And they didn't market it until just a month or two ago. And when they did market, after a lot of research, you know, they were trying to figure out failure points and important things like that that the homeowner is not always involved in and doesn't see. But, you know, when we're putting these projects under the life of the structure warranty, you know, they did a lot of test ratings and a lot of different things like that. And I don't think anybody else in the industry is doing that.
Nice. Well, Kevin, you have a big day ahead of you, I understand.
Just got one more. Got one more foundation to analyze. Need to go out and run the laser. Actually, a friend of a friend called me and needs some help, and they need some Saturday assistance. And we're open to doing that. You know, we have appointments. You call that office number. We'll get you set up on an appointment. You can also go online and make an appointment, but we'll accommodate your schedule. You know, we're here to serve the people.
Well, Kevin, how do people contact? What's the phone number, website, and all of that, please?
The office number is 1-800-246-9721, or you can go to helitechonline.com, and that'll direct you to a way that you can go ahead and book your appointment online.
Okay. Well, Kevin, thanks for joining us this morning, and appreciate the time away from your family and busy life and your Helitech customers. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Kevin Strange, Helitech. Thanks for joining us, friend. All right. Next up on KMOX, we've got back to phone lines here in a little bit. We're going to take a short pause and come back for more on University of KMOX. But keep in mind, as Kevin is working through all this, we have rain coming, and just write down that phone number, 800-246-9721, and because you will need it, and sometimes for a friend, sometimes for yourself, and sometimes for a neighbor. So anyway, we'll take a short pause on University of KMOX, come back for more on some hot phone questions here on KMOX.
This is the Helitech Waterproofing Home Improvement Show.
Presented by Suburban Leisure Center. The place with the big red chair. Celebrating 50 years.
Now, Scott Mosby on the voice of St. Louis KMOX.
All right, back together. Home Improvement. Phone lines for you. 314-436-7900. 800-925-1120. Scott Mosby at your service. Let's go to the phones. Fire up and see what's happening with my friend Tom. Tom, good morning. Welcome to KMOX. How can I help, sir?
Hey, hi, Scott. I have a home in De Pere. It's around 18 years old. It's a nice driveway, concrete, with aggregate edging, mm-hmm. about a foot or so wide. And the sidewalk is also aggregate. Been here for a while and cleaned it once and tried to coat it. And got a little concerned if I was being fair to that concrete in terms of the maintenance on it. And wonder if you could advise me on the importance of sealing both the aggregate and the regular concrete, and what's the best way.
Sure. Well, your white concrete, normal swirl broom finish, your regular white flat concrete, actually holds the dirt more than the aggregate. So you'll find that the color of that concrete when you wash it, and it's a pressure washer, and it has kind of a floor buffer looking circle thing that actually sprays and cleans that driveway a good bit. The issue is then you open the pores, you pull out most of the stains, you treat whatever stains or damage to it that you can. So then I would recommend a Prosocco or Prosocco, Prosocco. And that's a sealer that works really good on cement, on brick, on whatever. And then on the exposed aggregate, on the rock part, that needs to be washed as well, only you won't have such a dramatic change. The little white cement in between all the stones or the aggregate, Tom, that will change to a white, so it will become clean as well. That's a totally different sealer. That basically gets, if you want it to shine, and be the picture frame that it was intended, that would be an acrylic sealer, and it goes on kind of like a kitchen floor sealer. And the acrylic, you remember the song Clear Never Yellows? There was an acrylic floor tile wax that was acrylic, and that's what it gives it a wet look. So basically what your rock, your exposed aggregate border looks like, Tom, when it's wet, that's what that sealer will do. And it elongates the life of the concrete, but primarily it minimizes the stains. When you get a bird flying by after uh-huh. eating blueberries, you get a blue stain, or you get the oak leaves. So once you get it clean, once you seal it, it's better for the concrete, but it's dramatically cuts the maintenance of cleaning that concrete later. You can do it with a hose or whatever.
Okay. So how often should this be done?
Typically, the exposed aggregate, that shiny acrylic, only lasts about 2 or 3 years. So that typically needs it about every 3 years, and it is dramatically beautiful. If you leave it alone or put a different sealer, the same stuff you put on the white cement that is not a shiny, what we call wet look, mm-hmm. then you can apply that every 3 years as well. But you can't really tell when that sealer wears out because it really never looks really good, so therefore it never really looks really bad either. Whereas uh-huh. once you put that acrylic sealer on, it looks so dramatically better that
yeah.
that's where the three-year turn comes from.
Okay. Well, I sure appreciate the assistance, and I'll have a pretty shiny acrylic exposed aggregate.
it's worth the effort, and if you like the concrete, and frankly, you know, my point is just from a design standpoint, the concrete and the roof of the house, those two surfaces are such an enormous amount of what we see that, you know, just keeping the roof clean and the concrete clean and sealed, you know, can really make that house, you know, reach out and bring a positive impression, you know, for the curb appeal.
The regular concrete, how often would you clean and seal it?
Yeah, same way about every 3 years, just a different sealer. There, that sealer is a real, and that's Prosecco or Prosecco is it's a very performance based sealer, so it's a few dollars to buy that.
That's okay. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
But nothing like replacing that concrete 10 years early.
Okay. Thanks much, man.
All right, Tom. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye there. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby, KMOX. Little things around the house can mean a lot, and that's kind of where I go with this show, is what little things can you do that bring big impact? One of those, I think, is cleaning and sealing concrete, and likewise, the other thing is just keeping the roof in good repair, clean it, and likewise, if you ever change shingles on the house, there is a stain resistant asphalt roof shingle that costs another 10 or 15% for the material cost, but it has little copper pebbles or aggregate in it, and it resists that stain, that mildewy, that black streak on the roof, you know, for about 10 to 15 years, and it's worth it. So, I mean, it's not the last 15% that breaks the budget. It's the first chunk of, You know, it's the first 90% that is hard to swallow. The last 10% just means how long it lasts. 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. Thank you again to Kevin Strange of Helitech coming in this morning calling in to help us. They're seeing a lot with bowing walls and waterproofing. Let's go right to the phones here and talk to my friend Amy. Amy, good morning. Welcome. How can I help?
Good morning. This is Armadi, but Amy's easier on the phone.
Hi, Armadi.
How are you doing?
Wonderful.
We've got two questions. We're doing a soft install in our kitchen, and there's a couple of questions. One was, if we do a countertop with the same material for the full backsplash, we've heard a couple of people, you know, talk about which goes down first, the countertop or the backsplash. Thinking of the backsplash, if you put that first and butt the countertop up to it in quartz, would, you know, if you ever want to replace the countertop, you don't have to, it's easier than having to go underneath whatever's on the wall, whether it be tile or that other piece of full quartz. Or if you do it the other way around, you know, you always put the countertop up to the wall and then bring that down, so.
Yeah. Almost always the countertop first, and here's why. That's a heavy piece of stone, and handling that and putting it in perfectly is difficult. So you can get your backsplash in first, but then you have to have a dead perfect cut. I mean perfect cut to get the margins, because there's nothing uglier than a beautiful piece of stone. Then you have this, you know, eighth of an inch gap that's out of square on one side. So the reason we typically put the top in first, whether it's a tile backsplash or a solid material like the top, is to cover those margins and be able to get the first countertop in without dramatically scarring up the walls. You know, because it's one of the last things that goes in. So very seldom, I can't remember the last time we put a backsplash in first and then the countertop, because of the risk and necessity to be dead perfect right on.
Well, that's what we were leaning towards. But when we heard the other stuff, we thought, well, maybe that's the neat way to do it. So I thought I'd double check with you. And then the other question is, we're having a really hard time finding a window. We just need a double hung window over our, you know, over the kitchen sink, and we'd love to have the blinds between the windows, and are having a very hard time finding anybody who puts blinds between the windows in a double hung.
Some of that is Limit. Pella makes that. It's a premium window, and
I just walked away from the Pella store. The 800 number told us that they had it. The store personnel said they don't have it. That's why I just
go. Availability and whether they make it are two different things. Nothing is available, even if they make it. You know, and frankly, there are other windows that are available by adding an add-on piece over the face of the window so you can assimilate that. But there, frankly, is, you know, and over the sink, having it between the glass with spatters and splash and grease and all that nonsense. You know, frankly, if you're going there, just do the Pella window, frankly. And here's another one. For double-hung windows, I would urge you to consider, just consider, a casement window, because in later years, if you lean over that sink and you have any kind of back problems, lifting that double-hung window over that sink 2 feet away or 2.5 feet away, depending upon the sill depth, you know, it may be tough. So anyway, think about that. That's an accessibility issue over years. One, you just turn a crank.
Yeah. We've got awnings. We've got metal awnings over the windows, so the casement window won't work as well there as just the double hung. And with central air, we won't be opening them quite as often anyway, but, yeah.
Understood,
yeah. So you think Pella's the only one who officially makes them, and now they're saying they don't, so...
Well, in that size. Now, here you go. Yeah. In that window size, so if you have a custom size window or an odd size window, they may indeed not make that, because as you know, the industry, you know, the more sizes they make, the more fraught with mistakes can go into their system. So a lot of these manufacturers are cutting back and saying, yeah, we'll give you the whiz bang everything, but you have to pick it in, you know, one of these 10 sizes. So it is possible they don't offer that. And then you may wind up having to change the size of that window opening if you want to, or close it down or open it up, one or the other.
All right, so Pella's the only one with blinds between the window panes officially that you know of. I was hoping you'd have some other people, because internet search has really been bad.
It's such a premium thing. By the time you add the cost of window coverings to a window and then make a good window, you're already in the premium end. So even if you're in a different manufacturer on the premium end, it's a lot of money anyway. So that's where the Pella product tends to shine a little bit more. It just, they've been doing it. I mean, the original name of Pella Corporation is Roll Screen. So they've been doing this since 1900-whatever.
All right. So, well, thank you so much. At least I feel like I've done my homework and I didn't miss anything, because you don't have any more information either. So
No.
Thanks very much, and thanks for putting us right on the countertops too.
Right on.
So upward and onward.
All right, Armati. Good luck.
Thanks, Scott. Right. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye now. Home improvement. I love helping people noodle through this stuff, because that is exactly the process that we follow in design. Well, we want this, see if it works, is it available, all that stuff. So I'll talk about that a little more when I come back after this, right here on KMOX.
This is the Helitech Waterproofing Home Improvement Show.
Presented by Suburban Leisure Center, the place with the big red chair, celebrating 50 years.
Now, Scott Mosby on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yeah, indeed. Scott Mosby here. It was good to hear Rick Bayless's voice. Rick Bayless used to be a news person on KMOX. He would come in on Saturdays, and I would see Rick a good bit. For those of you that go back a ways, then there was Bill Reeker. I worked with Bill. That was a real treat for me. Bill was a true professional. And then going back before that, one of my favorite voices and people, Bob Hamilton, KMOX News. So, I you know, having been around for a little bit, I enjoy the memories, the professionalism, and just nice people that come through KMOX over 100 years of history. So anyway, Scott Mosby here at your service. I had a phone call here from Armati. Amy, they're doing a self-install in their kitchen, and I want to talk about that window just a little bit more, because there are several things that matter. The blinds between the glass is a feature that it's a sandwich. So you have a single pane or insulated glass on the outside of the pane of the sash, and then there's about a 1-inch space or 7/8 of an inch thickness space of dead air where blinds could be a simple metal blind, can be a fabric, can be a lots of different types of things available in that. But in doing that, so they don't have to manufacture a gazillion types of custom-made blinds, they limit the number of models or sizes of those windows that can have those things. So keep that in mind. Also, she asked about the countertop. And the countertop, one of the biggest reasons for me why we at Mosby really like that countertop going in first is water seal. So water seal. So if you have the backsplash in first and you slide that countertop in, your caulk is the only thing that keeps that water from dropping straight down against the wall or the sides. And granted, they all get caulked when they're put in. But when you put the countertop in first, you basically have a floor, and then you caulk the back so that when you set that counter or that backsplash in, it sets on top. It covers a lot of those gaps. But if the caulk fails, and water leaks back in there, it has to travel, you know, 5/8 of an inch, half an inch, a long way before it drops back down. So a lot of that is water seal, and why the countertop in a solid surface material or any countertop, whether it's a laminate and then tile, we typically put the top in first, backsplash next. Stay tuned. Coming up next, news, weather, and sports. So stay tuned right here on KMOX.
Welcome to the Helitech Waterproofing Home Improvement Show.
Presented by Suburban Leisure Center, the place with the big red chair, celebrating 50 years.
Now, Scott Mosby on the voice of St. Louis KMOX.
All right, middle of the country, Scott Mosby, lunchtime home improvement. This is the Helitech Home Improvement Show. Scott Mosby at the helm, if you will. Phone lines wide open for you, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900, and toll-free 800-925-1120, 800-925-1120. Lots of things happening as we get into deeper into the later summer and sneak up close to the fall. Maybe we're going to get some more of those do-it-yourself projects around the house. Bring it on. That's what we do here on KMOX. Any new homeowners or do-it-yourselfers or just general things you have, questions around the home, that is the purpose of the Helitech Home Improvement Show. And we have 10 phone lines for you to call in and find out what's cooking and get an answer. I promise to give you the best answer that I can with all the experience. Sometimes I will also disclose if there are conflicting requirements of some of those products and methods, because when you get to exterior walls and with the humidity, it's just every part of the country has a different weather, i.e. dew point a requirement of how that works for the wall or not. Anyway, that and more. So bring it on. My name is Scott Mosby. I own and operate Mosby Building Arts, founded in 1947. We are architects, licensed architects, certified aging in place specialists, every type of residential designer you can imagine we have on staff at Mosby, and we self-perform most of our work. We still have trade partners that do a great deal of the work with us as well. But frankly, training matters, and having a well-trained and motivated work staff is just an important part to me and our company. So it's a kind of important thing. Anyway, let's go to our phone lines right now and see what's cooking and talk with my friend Howard. Howard, good afternoon. Welcome to lunch on KMOX. How can I help?
Yeah, I'm looking for brackets that you use to mount a mirror on a dresser, the old style. It's like a U type bracket.
Yeah, kind of a spring bracket.
It's not spring. You screw it into the to the bottom of the dresser, and then one in the mirror, and you've got a metal pole that it fastens to.
Right. Have you been to a hardware store with that same question?
Yeah, I've been to two of them already, and none of them had exactly what I'm looking for, but.
They
have some kind of U brackets that are close, but it doesn't look like it doesn't have the metal bolt that's or machine bolt that screws into the center of the bracket.
Right, right. Well, I'm familiar. There is a company called C.R. Lawrence, and I think it's L-A-U-R-E-N-C-E, C.R. Lawrence. That online, they provide those mirror brackets. And frankly, those hardware stores can custom order those brackets, and they're a little difficult to get. We buy them by the hundred because they're just not something you can go buy at the store. So we do, we'll buy them for a year. But they're typically the ones that we buy are chrome or brushed aluminum, whatever they might be, and they're a rigid U shape on the bottom, and the screw goes in the bracket behind the mirror. So the bottom of the mirror drops down into that U clip. And then the top clip actually has spring U clips that you lift them up. So you tilt the mirror into that, lift up the U clips, and they pull back down, keeping the mirror on the wall without having any kind of adhesive. So that's why I was asking about the spring clips. Then you can pull your mirror off and change it anytime you want, or, you know, all of that sort of thing.
Oh, but that's mounted to the wall then, or the room.
Yes.
Okay, not on the dresser itself.
No, that would be on the wall. Dresser clips that you're describing there typically are in my experience, they typically are wood that screws to the back of the dresser on that mirror, and then you put whatever brackets on your vertical wood uprights.
Oh.
And then they're visible,
yeah,
too,
unless
you drop
them.
Yeah.
Well, this came with the metal rods, like C-shaped rod.
Oh, yeah.
So it's open in the center, and then you that machine screw fastens to that to hold the mirror up, basically.
Yes.
About.
Yeah.
And you can adjust it, you know, whatever height you want.
Yes, yes.
At that point.
Well, you're looking for a specific type of bracket that I would go back to, either that or go back to a furniture refinisher, because the furniture refinishers, people that do, you know, new finishes on your dining room table,
right,
or side table, they know the sources for those types of pieces of hardware. And this, they're tough to find because, you know, they're probably $6 or $7, but it may take 2.5 hours to find and order the thing. So, you know, it's hard for a company to spend 2.5 hours on a $6 item, but, you know, that's kind of how it is.
Right.
And that's why
I called a refinisher, and he told me Amazon would be my best shot.
Yeah,
but I couldn't find him on there either, as far as that goes. So
yeah,
he said you got to know exactly what to ask for, otherwise it'll pop other stuff up that you don't want.
Yes. I understand thoroughly. It's knowing what to do and what you're looking. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. Okay,
all right.
I appreciate
Howard,
the info.
Good luck, my friend. Happy hunting.
Thanks.
Home Improvement, Scott Mosby. Sometimes knowing what you're looking for and what the manufacturer is of what you're looking for, those are difficult. C.R. Lawrence is kind of one of the wholesale suppliers for the glass companies. That's where they buy all the parts for a custom half-inch glass shower door and divider section. So that's kind of the... one of the places. So that's an opportunity. But I think if I was looking for that, I would find old school hardware store, you know, and not all of them are as experienced as others, and ask that question and work it through, because they are kind of made for looking those things up. And sometimes those guys know what they're doing, but that's knowing which hardware store to go to. Anyway, for here, 314-436-7900, 436-7900, 800-925-1120. Scott Mosby here. We have 1 hour going up until 1 o'clock today. And at 1 o'clock today, we've got the Retire Ready, and then Business of Family Business after that. Later on, 5:20 today, Cards versus the Cincinnati Reds right here on University of Camwax. Lots of things happening there. So stay tuned. More coming back. I'm going to take a short pause for a few things right here on Camwax, and I'll return after this. All right, back together. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby, KMOX. Lunchtime right here in the middle of the dial, middle of the day, in the middle of the country right here, KMOX. Let's go to the phone line, see what's happening with my friend Tom. Tom, good afternoon. Welcome to Lunchtime. How can I help you, my friend?
Hello, Scott. Good afternoon to you, too, and I really enjoy the show. I've got a concrete question, a little bit different than the previous Tom and his concrete question. And so I had power washed my concrete deck, and about a week later, my daughter spilled a glass of red wine onto the concrete. And about a week later after that, I tried to power wash it out, and it still looks like it's there. And I'm wondering, is there anything that you're aware of that I could do to get that stain out of the concrete?
Yes, this is the same kind of thing that happens with stone countertops. It's kind of a poultice. So where you have an infection in a body wound, you put this salve on it, and the salve draws the infection out and whatever. This is the same thing. There is a way of doing that. It's very effective when you get it when that stuff is still wet, but once you come back a week or two later, you're trying to draw out a dry and bonded stain, you know, that's, you know, akin to, you know, what Native Americans made, you know, colorants out of. So you're in the big leagues here.
I'm afraid so. Yeah, that's what my fear was.
Well, there's a product. There's something you can do to kind of make yourself feel better.
Okay.
How big is the area, Tom?
I would say probably it was a big glass, so maybe like 3 square feet.
Okay.
Like a 3x3.
Okay. Clear plastic, ideally a thicker sheet, you know, 2 mil. You don't need to go to 4 or 6, but, you know, not a dry cleaner bag, but okay. Something to keep that. So get that wet with just water. After your power washing, there is a product called whiting powder, W-H-I-T-I-N-G, whiting powder. And it's basically like white lime, just normal lime that you would have on a baseball field, but it's called whiting powder. It's more refined.
Okay.
And basically you mix that stuff up with water, but you have to wet the concrete so that the pores of the concrete get wet. The water carries it in, and you basically put this poultice, kind of like peanut butter, just on those stains in the various places, and you keep it wet. You may need to keep spritzing it on a day like today to keep it damp, and then you lay that piece of clear plastic, and you do the best you can to tape it down to that concrete to keep that moisture trapped in that plastic. And believe it or not, if you can keep it wet, the sun will help drive that, because there's a thing in building science called vapor drive. All that means is that the wetter place tries to get dry. Well, as that wet concrete tries to get dry, the steaming of the sun will actually heat up that poultice. You may need to pull that plastic back, spritz it down, and keep making it wet so that it keeps pulling. But basically, that poultice kind of draws that red stain the best you can. I'm 50-50 that it will improve it a little bit, because after a couple of weeks, you're, you know, on clean concrete. Woo, that's, you know, that was the time to seal it for just this reason.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. How long, Scott, would the poultice need to stay on the stain in order to maybe achieve, you know, like past the point of, hey, if it hasn't been, you know, lift that out by now, it's not going to?
I would do it for about 3 days, and pretty much, you know, more is better, but, you know, it's diminishing returns. If you'll get something, and you may need to change, you know, the whiting powder, you get 5 or 10 pounds of this stuff or whatever, and you might have a little bit of trouble finding that, but it is really, it's just a really white, dry powder that when it's wet, it will draw contaminants, colors, various things out of that concrete. So it'll work out
for you. Great. Thanks for your help. Appreciate it. Have a good rest of the day.
Okay, Tom. Good luck, my friend. Back together. Home improvement, Scott Mosby. Again, takes a little bit of effort, and that's the way that countertops, if you ever have a white marble countertop kitchen, and this is why the man-made onyx tops have become so popular, is they're sealed and they're not open pores. They do need to have a sealer on them, kind of, but generally it's really hard to stain them. You have to almost etch the shiny surface off of them, but that's it. So there's a whiting powder, and this is where I learned it was a red wine for one of our clients that actually stained the stone countertop, and this is how the stone cleaner did. And they're also cleaners. If you go to one of the stone companies, they will also have stone cleaner, and that for you as well, Tom. You might go to a stone cleaner company and they can do it, but typically when you get a professional doing this, say in an elevator shaft or on an elevator front or marble floors, terrazzo floors, they will steam that almost like a steam wallpaper remover to lift some of that But, you know, that's getting into some pretty serious equipment, and you have to kind of know what you're doing so you don't, you know, burn yourself and such. So anyway, 314-436-7900-800-925-1120. Scott Mosby here at your service. Lots of room for phone callers, so bring it on. If you've got one in your pocket, bring it out. And let's talk to my friend Ed now. Hey, Ed, thanks. Good afternoon on CamWex. How can I help?
Hey, Scott. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I'm on a project in my kitchen, redoing it, and I'm at the point where my kitchen cabinets are going to have to be redone. Mm-hmm. I want to sand them down and repaint them instead of putting stain on them.
Okay.
I do know that I have to sand them down to get the sheen off of it so the paint will stick to it. But what I don't know is what type of paint to put on them and how to apply the paint. Like, do I use a nap roller, a paintbrush, or a foam roller?
Well, I'll tell you what. The best way to paint kitchen cabinets is like painting a car with a sprayer. So when you typically have somebody come in and paint your kitchen cabinets, it's a spray booth operation. They set up, they tape everything off, they remove the doors, take all the hardware off, and they spray them in place, and they spray the doors generally either in place or in the kitchen or outdoors, depending. That being said, then it always, the last tool, if you're going to brush these things, you can apply the paint with a fine nap roller, but you need to back brush it because the smoothness, and this is a big deal because the viscosity, how thick or thin that paint is, defines how much of the paint bristles strokes come out of that paint, how flat that paint will be. So this is tougher than it sounds. It's important to sand that surface down, remove most, if not all, of that finish. Otherwise, you're painting the old finish, and then that, you know, now you're into a different chemistry. So I would take this to a good paint store, take one of your doors with you, and ask that paint supplier, because the primer has to get along with the top coat. I suspect you're going to wind up with some sort of a urethane paint, which tends to be fairly shiny, but also very tough. So I think it's going to be a urethane paint. You need a special primer to go with that, and then try and get as flat a finish, because the more shiny that paint finish is, the more blemishes will show in those cabinets. And every cabinet has a lot of blemishes, so you may need to sand them and fill them and smooth them and such. But I would turn that question to whoever supplies that paint. Make them do the chemistry of the matching for primer and paint, as well as the bonding to that door.
Okay, now, I should not use no latex paint on them, correct?
No. No, your latex paint is an open pore paint. Latex is made to breathe, where moisture moves in and out. And it takes about 30 days for latex to cure. So you're going to have doors sticking to the frames. You basically can't put your cabinets together for, you know, 30 days. Just latex just dries so slowly. And even urethane and solvent-based materials, you know, the biggest trouble you're going to have is how slowly this paint will cure, and especially when you throw 50% relative humidity at it, which is where we are today in St. Louis. It's just a humid day. Paint doesn't dry very well when the air is full of moisture.
Okay.
So, yeah, don't be in a hurry. And once you paint, and you'll need at least two top coats of paint on there, sand it in between, because you'll apply the first layer and back brush it with your brush so that you smooth out the paint and make it even in coating as best you can. And then you block sand it after that dries. So you have to kind of get a paint that will dry, and that you may wind up with kind of a, you know, sanding sealer for a really soft primer, if they can get something to go with it, to where then you can block sand that first primer, flatten it out, put your top coat on, and then block sand that. So it's kind of like auto body work. You know, anything that you invest in making the surface smoother, flatter, better, comes out in good looking cabinets.
Okay. I appreciate it, Scott. You have a very fine day.
All right, you too, Ed. Be careful there. It's a big deal. I would try something, you know, on a sample piece of something a few times, and, you know, before I went at my cabinets, I'd try and paint a few pieces of plywood first.
Okay. Okay, all right, I'll do it. Thank you.
You bet. Take care. All right, Scott Mosby here, trying to help as many people as I can. 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. Take a short pause now and come back for more after this on University of KMOX. All right, back together. We are here in the middle of the hour, coming up to 1 o'clock. Stay tuned here on KMOX. We've got the business of family business, or Retire Ready, coming up after this show, and then the business of family business, which follows that. And then 5:20 tonight, Cards versus the Reds, and the ball game starts at 6:15, pregame show at 5:20, right here on KMOX. Let's go to the phones and talk with Vidya. Hey, Vidya, good afternoon. Welcome to KMOX, and how can I help you today?
Oh, I have a question about exterior paint. We have cedar siding, and the paint stays well on that, but there are vertical boards. They support the siding, and I don't know what's the name for that. But there are a few areas where the paint peels off very easily. And I had to, we had told that to the painter, and I thought he knew what he was doing, but it still comes off. And it's the east side of the house, sorry.
Oh, did you paint the siding or did you stain it?
Paint.
Okay. I think those boards, the vertical boards, are called battens, B-A-T-T-E-N-S.
Okay.
Is it kind of a plywood-looking siding with these boards vertically about every foot or foot and a half apart?
Yeah, it's by the bay window, so it's a little smaller size cedar boards.
Okay. Those would generally, the problem with cedar is it's very, very porous. It's best thought of as a sponge. So you really, really have to power wash that cedar deeply and then let it dry. And then with paint, it's best to get a good penetrating primer. And generally, painting cedar is not a difficult thing. So I suspect that the wood might have been a little too wet when the paint went on. And it's very easy to do that with the humidity and the rainstorms we've had. I mean, it's just, you know, it's hard. You basically clean and prepare the siding on your house. And then you wait for, you know, 5 days without rain and good heavy sunshine on it. So, well, that's hard to get sometimes. So I suspect it was painted when it was a little too wet, Vidya.
Oh, because the cedar is fine. It's those vertical boards that had areas where paint peels off.
And sometimes because of that, you're better off pulling those boards off, putting new board, pre-painting them, and putting those boards back on because basically maybe they're telling you something. It's if you do it again, it's just going to peel again. So sometimes it's just change the rules, try something different, pull those boards, prime paint, and then apply, and then touch-up paint after they're reinstalled might be the highest effective way to get it.
Okay, so those should be the brand-new boards?
I think so. With what I'm hearing, I suspect that's the next step if you can't get the paint to stick. Because the plywood is a different kind of, it's a manufactured board. And the battens, they're actually, you know, pieces of wood. And they take almost two different kind of processes to paint them.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Okay, Vidya. Good luck. And there you are. Sometimes you even do things right, you know. So say the painter waited for that wood to dry. And when you use kind of a latex paint, then a damp board actually sometimes carries the primer into the pores of the wood. So sometimes, you know, that can work for you as opposed to against you, depending upon the type of paint you're using. But, you know, if you've done a good job, good surface prep, and this stuff paint peels off, you know, sometimes the wood, and cedar is known for this, sometimes that lumber has enough sap or leachate in it, you know, just from being a cedar tree, what makes it resistant to rot and moisture also makes it tough to paint. So very common with both cedar and redwood because those two woods are resistant for we can system it, and they're more resistant than untreated white wood. So sometimes you just start all over with a reliable, you know, piece of wood and get a good bond on it. Next up, let's see what's happening with Archie. Hey, Archie, Scott Mosby, lunchtime on KMOX. How can I help you, sir?
Okay, Scott, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I got two decks, one up and one down. Mm-hmm. And what I did was I power washed the one that was on the lower level. Should have done the one on the second level first, but I really wasn't sure that I was going to do it. But anyway,
yeah.
What's happened is there's splinters in the wood now that I've power washed that lower deck. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if I got some kind of a stain or something and put it on there, would that take care of the splinters, or is there a product that I could put on there that would take care of some of those splinters that came up from the power washing?
Nope.
And what's the best product that I could use?
Sandpaper. And I'm not kidding, Archie, you did a great job to properly power wash a deck. Sometimes you get a little too much pressure and you're basically blowing the wood apart, but it's hard to really pressure wash a wood deck, and especially cedar, that doesn't splinter. So it's very common to follow up with a sanding pole or a belt sander or something to knock those splinters back down. And there is no really effective way. If you use one of those thick paints like a deck over, which is kind of a thick, creamy paint, that just does a great job and holds the splinters up even more, makes them stronger. So the proper thing is to, mission accomplished is my first point. You got the first step done. Second is an open mesh grid sandpaper. It's kind of like a drywall mesh. Flat sandpaper is not necessarily the right thing. I like to use an open grid mesh sandpaper. And, you know, because of the grain on that lumber, either that or a belt sander. But it's pretty labor intensive to do it correctly, but I think you're doing it the right way. I don't know of a better way to do it.
Okay.
Not the answer you were looking for.
My only option is sanding.
Yes, sir.
No, that's definitely not what I was looking for. Now, what will happen if I don't sand, you know?
Those splinters will become institutionalized, so they will not wear off. They don't really break off. And, you know, if you get any kids or grandkids or even nice shoes with leather soles, you know, those splinters can really be a problem. So, you did the right first step. The second step to properly do this is now reduce the risk. And the risk is you got a bunch of little daggers down there in splinter form.
Right.
So they really do need to be worn. And it's usually a soft wood. So, you know, Archie, don't avoid this too much. You might be surprised how quickly it works. It's the edges of the boards that are toughest to smooth over.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much, Scott.
Yeah, good luck. I think you did a great job on step one, but step two just requires, you know, the full Monty. So give it all.
Okay. All righty.
All right. Take care. Thanks, Archie. Bye now. And when I'm talking about that, sometimes the tool, and it's usually a drywall sanding pad. So you go to the drywall section of the hardware store, the home section, and it has a little handle, and you get these drywall sanding grid meshes, which are very common in the drywall finishing trade. And you've got a handheld one, and then you've got a pole sander that is used for sanding up and down corners and ceilings on drywall. So you've got a 120 mesh and a 150 mesh. The higher number is smoother, finer. 120 mesh would be 100, or 120 mesh would be my choice for sanding the deck. And you just kind of, you can do it from a standing position if you do the pole sander, but you're talking about back and forth, like, you know, scrubbing a patio with a push broom, only you're doing it with a sanding pad, and that pad's only about 5 inches wide and about 10 inches long. But that's the tool that I would use. And I would give it a try and, you know, see what you think. At least do you know, the first couple of feet of it and see what you think, and then estimate your time as to whether you want to do it. You can use a belt sander, but when you do a belt sander and you're moving that sandpaper as fast as a belt sander, you get a belt sander for $100 to $200, but then your sanding belts are $3, $4, $5 a piece, and they wear out. So to do this deck, it may go faster, but you have to be very careful because you can put divots and gouges with a belt sander with a power tool that aggressive in sanding. You can cut the time necessary to sand that deck, but you can also do a less attractive job at it because power has to be, you know, controlled by good trade skills and experience. So that might be the one that, you know, is a little more risky. Typically, pros doing that are a little better off with power tools. If this is the first time you're getting into it, I would use my first thing. I'd go and I'd buy a hand sander, which has the neoprene pad on it. And I would also buy a pole sander, the neoprene, and then get, you know, a pack of, you know, the 100 or 120 grit open mesh sanding pads, and they clip on there on those things. Anyway, Scott Mosby Home Improvement, 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. We're wrapping up to the top of the hour, 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock hour, we've got Retire Ready, and that comes up at 1 to 2, and then 2 o'clock is Business, a Family Business. Then we go through the afternoon with the Cards versus the Reds, Cardinal Baseball right here on KMOX, 520 pregame show right here on KMOX. Scott Mosby Home Improvement. I will return for more after this.
The Kansas City Chiefs open their season against the Cleveland Browns this Sunday. Catch all the action. Pregame at 2, kickoff 3:25.
Touchdown, Kansas City!
Hear it on KMOX Sister Station 97.1 FM Talk and following Cardinals Baseball on KMOX.
Yes, indeed. Scott Mosby here at your service, University of KMOX. Thank you very much to Helitech Kevin Strange, who called in early in the hour to keep us on cue for taking care of foundations and waterproofing the various things that Helitech takes care of. So thanks to Kevin Strange, who stepped in and helped us out. And let's go to the phone lines here and see what's happening with my friend Hui. Hey, Hui, good afternoon. Welcome to KMOX. How can I help?
Hi, Scott. I have a question about insulation. Mm-hmm. I bought a 1950s Cape Cod, but I didn't realize how much of a pain it is to insulate and stuff. and so through the summers, I can really feel the heat in the upper levels. Yeah. So my question is, I can't access the very top attic, that little triangle. How yeah. would you add more insulation in there without clogging up the ridge vents or the soffit vents?
I would cut a hole in the ceiling.
Pardon?
I would cut a hole in the ceiling. Or do you have gable vents, Hui, on the end? Do you have access from the two sides?
I do. They're tiny little gable vents. And would you just spray a lot of dense packet from that side?
Well, access is everything. So the two choices you have, number one, is there enough room for you to get up inside there and do the work you need to do once you get there?
No, it's probably only 2 feet at its highest and 1 foot at the lowest.
Wow. I know exactly what you're talking about, and this is where technology kind of prohibits. You've only got so much space up there anyway. And golly, I think I would be tempted to blow, but it would have to be a professional blowing it because they have telescoping poles to hold this hose. And the issue is it's going to be pricey because there's not a whole lot of square feet. There's a lot of labor time involved. And the issue that I'm afraid of, you'll get it much better in insulated, but I don't know that you will dramatically change how comfortable it is up in that room.
Okay.
Number one, I think you're probably underserved like every other Cape Cod within my voice with heat. There's probably just not enough BTUs coming through the ductwork up to that attic to heat that. But if I was going to do something about this, Hui, on your house, I would probably install a foam or an inside surface thickener, I would put 2 inches of styrofoam on the inside of that surface and cover it over with drywall and extend the electrical boxes and the door, you know, the window frames and trims and all that. Because anything short of that, you're kind of putting lipstick on the pig. You just
right,
can't get
and I know exactly
insulin.
What you mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I bought the house, I asked for a new roof, and they did, and they also installed that ridge vent. But what I realized that they never had any soffit vents. So I'm beginning to make my own soffit vents to try to ventilate that space. But
perfect.
Is it even worth it to do that?
Yes, it is. But it's going to make that is going to make it even colder because you're now going to properly ventilate that attic, which means drop the temperature in that attic as well. So, yeah, I would ventilate it, but it's going to make your room up there even colder in the winter.
And hotter in the summer?
Amen. Amen.
Okay.
I bet. Yeah. So I'd go to the inside on that. I've got about 10 seconds here. So basically, I would keep on the inside of that and then cover it over with drywall because you can work it and you get to it and make a difference. Scott Mosby, KMOX, stay tuned.